You were talking about when you went out for a reconnaissance in a...
In a bagel cabin. And they say we went out probably half a mile, just the officer and the driver. And we were in touch back with the battery, just in case we needed any fire. What was interesting to me, I was riding along and looked out, and it was something I didn't know, although I was the one that passed a load of the messages. But I looked out and looked straight into the eyes of two blokes in the slit trench, and they were Aussies out on forward listening posts. I didn't know that, mate. Until I actually saw them, but they used to sit there all day, just listening, on forward listening posts. I think the infantry did that fairly regularly, you know, but and the time I was out, obviously they saw us moving, so we had one or two shells dropped in and around us, and we moved smartly back, you know. But what we learned from it, I'm not sure, but it was a done thing, and I thought that NCO in charge of singing, I ought to do it at least once, if yes, at least I knew what it was all about then. I remember that one.
Yeah. What about, we've done a lot about the signals. What about you had all these lines coming into the battery headquarters, and then did you have 426? There'd be a line going off to the regimental 107 brigade
right.
headquarters
that's
as well,
right.
And another line going to the 425. Would there be, or would that?
Yes, there was one. There must have been one to the 425, definitely, because when either position had been shelled and one hadn't, I would find an excuse to ring up 425, just have a chat with the old man, my dad, and he would find an excuse to ring wheel.
To see you were all right.
Basically, that was what it was about. I mean, we didn't say that. But, you know, it was not very often, I suppose, you get a father and son. It was really, you know, if they'd had a bit of a to-do, I'd bring up on some excuse for them. Basically, see if the old man was all right, they'd do the same for me.
Did it worry you having your dad out there? Would you rather he was at home, or...?
You know, I don't think I thought a great deal about it, really. I thought, you know, well, he's in it the same as me, and, you know, and I think, like most people, you think, well, nothing's going to happen.
What
and of course it does, but that's just a cool thing.
What about links with other artillery units? Because you were connected with 1st Royal Horse Artillery.
Yeah, I knew it was something to do with the 1st Royal Horse.
And I think it was 1st Royal Tank Regiment as well that you mentioned before. I've just seen in the book.
Well, I knew it was a 1st something, so I think it must be the Tank Regiment I was talking about in the 1st
But you also had links with the 1st Royal Horse Artillery, a regular unit that was sort of in the line with you. Do
I don't
you
remember that, exactly. I remember we had one with the 425, I remember we had them with HQ and things like that, but I don't remember having one with them. I mean, I'm not saying we didn't, I'm saying I don't remember it.
Did things, as you were in Tobruk for a long time.
9 months.
Was the counter battery fire, did it become more effective, or as the Germans registered you, or was there anything that could be done?
Well, we were pretty well dug in, you know what I mean, and I think they got it. We moved a target to, you know, they moved the batteries a bit.
Would they, do you mean they moved the gun positions?
The gun positions. No,
but they
not
wouldn't.
Us. Not us. We stayed where we were because we were well dug in, as it were, you know, in these dugouts. They really were good dugouts.
And not easy to spot, I presume.
Oh, no, because we're colourful and everything, you know. But I dare say that they knew where they were because, I mean, they must have had the
How did you react on the Shell fire? I mean,
well, the point is that when you're moving about like that, you hear the shell, you hear the thing scream and you hear it explode, and I think when you're young and everything, you think nothing could happen to you. I don't think it bothered you a great deal, unless it was fairly concentrated, and then it was. And bombing upset me more than the shell.
What about, did you get, you'd had a high level bombing at Mercer, and
had a high level bombing. We'd had a some high level bombing interval, but it was mostly Stukas.
Now you said that what you hadn't liked about the high level bombing was the unpredictability of it.
Unpredictability of it. You didn't know where they were going to land.
What was Stukas like for you then?
Stukas were much better. If you can say that, because once a Stuka dived, you knew where it was going, and if it was not coming at you, you could stand and watch it. Because, I mean, they actually dived down, and you could see them coming. You could see them release the bombs and dive away. So you could actually stand and watch the Stuka. But I don't know.
Did you get any mass Stuka attacks where there were a lot of them?
Yeah, one in particular, one day, and now this is how things stick in your mind. One day, I looked up, and it was the day that the Stukas had picked on our position. And I'm talking about headquarters. Where we were, if you like, it was our turn to get it. Saw these coming down, ran like the clappers for the dugouts, which were, you know, where there was any.
Not for slit trenches then?
Well, if you're out in the open, you're out for a slit trench if there was one, but as it was on there, because we died from the dugouts, you know, because as I say, they were pretty good dugouts.
You felt safe in them?
We felt safe. On this particular day, I looked up and saw something dark coming down and not very far away. And remember, all this happens in a flash. And I thought, you're at it, lad, you know, this is it. And something hit the ground, and I was still kept going and got into the dugout. And thank Christ for that. Anyway, when the raid was over, I went up. What it was, these Stukas, because they had to come a long way, carried spare petrol tanks. Before they jettisoned them on, they jettisoned the tanks, and it was in one of these tanks that had come down. Thank God it was.
It was pretty close to you then.
Oh, it was within, you know, a minute and a half. All the way.
About 6 foot, 7 foot.
Yeah, might be a fraction of them, but at the time it seemed pretty bloody close, believe me.
Was that the closest escape you had from Stukas? During this, at Tobruk?
Yes, at Tobruk, from Stukas, yes. That was the closest I had. I've watched Stukas many a day when I've been either on outpatient or at the OP and seen them come in and actually bomb various positions. Because, as I say, you could actually stand and watch it bombing. You know, with high level bombing.
You can actually
see the bombs leave the plane, you know.
How did you feel when you saw them bombing your dad's battery, you know? I mean.
Well, not very clever about it, but, you know, that's what I say after it was over, you were able to find out that. As far as I can recall, and again, you know, I don't know anything, I don't think we lost an awful lot of people with Stukas. Or a lot of equipment, strangely.
Did the machine gun at all? Or did any planes machine gun there?
I can remember one day, I suppose a hike, or whatever, came over on reconnaissance, and we fired everything out. I had a revolver, we fired revolvers, right because we never hit the damn thing, but he machine gunned a bit, and then went on. But from where we were, you remember, on the Aladdin side, from the observation post, you could see no end of activity on the Aladdin aerodrome, which was in the distance. I don't know how far it would be, but you'd see a hell of a lot of activity. And I don't think our guns could reach. I think we tried taking them up pretty well near the perimeter and firing them, but I don't think we could actually reach them. One of the things we used to try was, you remember I told you we went to these big dugouts where we was, and we got these big guns in. Actually, there was a load of ammunition and huge shells and cordite or whatever it is you fire. And some clever clubs worked out how to fire these. And we used to fire them.
What they call the bush artillery in the book.
Yeah, is that what they call them? They used to be cooks and signalers and any odd bod. Used to put these damn things in. And when they fired, I think they went a fair way. In fact, they probably tried them on the aerodrome, I don't know. But they were on tracks, and the recoil sent them back on the tracks.
Did you actually work those at all?
No, I helped load them and all that kind of thing, you know what I mean, but not, I think they fired it to the lanyard, if I remember right.
They recognised it was dangerous then?
Oh, right. Well, one of the things we fired on was the damn thing blowing up, but no, we fired them quite a lot. Another thing Trick got up to, there's a bloke there, I think his name was Sergeant Mack. I can't remember why he should be at headquarters or what for that reason, but he got a Browning machine gun off a plane, and he used to spend all his spare time loading these belts of ammunition. Then when planes came over, he'd fire them. I mean, he'd pull the trigger and it would go like the clappers, and he used to spend hours literally loading these things up, but with my hand. So we tried all.
Did he ever hit anything?
Well, not that we know of. You know.
Was there any official anti-aircraft protection for your battery or for the brigade?
No. I know that in the town and around the aerodrome in the town, they had Bofors. We know they had some Bofors because we heard the Bofors going when there was raging. You hear the Bofors.
But you didn't have a Vickers or anything like that?
Not the time.
Were you aware of the British aircraft? I mean, did they make their presence felt at all at the start of the thing?
As far as I can remember in the book, I think when we went in, I think there were about three Gladiators, I'm not sure. And one day, one of these lads got shot down, and he landed on our position. And we went and got him out, and he got a big gaping wound in his thigh. I always remember that, and that because our MO, or our orderly bloke, gave him some morphine. I can see that thing now, and he got out of it. And this bloody German followed him down. You know, machine gun him, and he got out and ran away. Whether he caught him as he was running, or whether it hit him before he landed, I'm not sure. But I do remember he got this big,
his right thigh.
In his thigh, he got a huge gaping wound in his thigh.
Did he die?
I think in thighs and things they look worse than what they are, if you know what I mean by that, because it's a bit fleshy and it. drops out in the bit, you know. But I always remember him. Don't remember much about. I don't think they were there long, were they?
I think they were all shot down eventually.
I wouldn't say. I think they were, and I remember him from there that particular day.
What about the actual conditions you lived in under? I mean, we've talked a little bit about that. How did it differ from Mercer? I mean, because you were, I mean, it's desert the same.
That's right.
Were you, what about your food and water? Did you have enough food and water there?
Well, yeah, as I recall, you know, it was very much of a much. It was everything chucked in a pan and stewed up, you know what I mean? No real refinements or anything like that.
What were the basic
I think it was stewed mostly down to tins, if I recall, and bully beef and onions and things like that, you know, something bread, obviously. You should get some tinned fruit.
But you didn't go hungry?
Oh no, I don't remember going hungry, all Thursday.
You had enough water?
Oh yeah, it was very tainted, you know, with is it chlorine or whatever they put in it, some horrible bloody stuff, but I never remember going hungry or thirsty.
Would you drink the water as water, or did you drink it as tea to try and...
Mostly as tea.
Was that by preference, or was it just cover the taste of it?
Well, I think probably to cover the taste, you know what I mean. We did get occasionally bottles of like lime juice and things like that, but not much of that, but occasionally got that, you know what I mean. Because they used to bring most of the stuff up by boat. I remember one particular instance, they brought some supplies into the harbour, and there'd been a raid on them when they went in, and they discovered that a load of cigarettes were missing. And a few days later, some Aussies came around with a lorry to the various positions. They came to our HQ and they've got these, I don't know if you've ever seen them. There used to be John Players in round tins, 50 in a tin. And they were flogging these.
They weren't giving them away then?
Flogging them. That's the honest truth, though. These sods must have knocked them off while they were... You know, I mean, I didn't smoke, so it didn't matter to me, but they used to... they came around flogging these tins of Players.
Would you get a... I know you didn't smoke. Would you get a cigarette ration or...?
Well, I'm not too sure, because as I said, I seem to remember... You'd have to check this with other people, but I seem to remember... Was it fruit that was in the... Well, I think fruit was the head of Egypt at the time, you know what I mean. And he'd sent some cigarettes up, I think, to the guys at the book. And I'm being vulgar, to hear the lads talk, they're like, come on, shit, if you want it. And I seem to remember they dug them into the ground. They were in big boxes, and they buried the damn things because they didn't want them. And then there was a shortage, if I recall, and they were sort of digging them up. You know, these lads that really smoked were sort of going around saying, where the hell are we buried these damn things? So, as I recall, I think there was a shortage of cigarettes, but it wasn't something that I was very bothered about because I didn't smoke myself.
Did they have a rum ration at that time?
Yeah.
How was that issued out to you?
A tot of them at the time. Now,
was it daily or when it was cold? Or?
Well, it was never very cold. Except, mind you, you'd be surprised, it was very cold at night. Very cold at night. It was mostly just get rum before we had a. If we was doing any action or anything like that, as I recall.
And who doled it out?
One of the sergeants, my old man used to, in 425, I remember, he used to don it out because he liked his rum, and anybody that didn't want it, he put it in the thing, he used to drink it. And me, for instance, I never used to drink wine. I couldn't stand spirits, you know, so I didn't drink. But we had a rum ration, definitely had a rum ration. And it came in these stone jars. You know, I remember the day we fought our way out of Tobruk, I remember them dishing out rum rations then.
When they dished them out, I mean, you were stone cold sober. Would the ration they doled out before some sort of action, would it be enough to influence the men at all, or was it just?
No, I wouldn't have thought so. I think it was just a bit of Dutch courage, but it was only more or less a top. I don't know what one does to you, but.
But it didn't seem to make them drunk. It just.
No. I think it was what you might call Dutch courage. Again, you know, I didn't have any. I sound like a real goody here. I really wasn't, but you know what I mean. I didn't smoke or drink.
There's no beer ration then, or.
I can't remember that. I think there was some beer. Not a lot. I think they used to get stuff up from the Naffy. You know, like through the.
Were there any canteens in Tobruk? I mean, or anywhere you could go to buy bits and bobs.
Not that I recall. Not that I can think about. I suppose there might have been, but you see, my experience in Tobruk was very, very much. I think I went into the harbour area about once, and I can't remember why that was. Why I went in for that in particular, but I didn't stray very much out of the Alangan area. There was no necessity for it, if you understand what I mean. There was very much. I travelled backwards and forwards to the OPs, I travelled to the gun positions, I travelled between the HQs and that sort of thing. But never, in a way, there weren't many places you could go to. After all, there was only a town. Didn't go long enough until the famous places. Not really, really.
Was it boring during this period?
Well, it wasn't boring when the action was in, but if I remember rightly, and it's a fine day, your memory fails you a bit. In the sort of the middle area, when there was not an awful lot happening, then it was pretty boring, you know. There's not a great deal to do, except, I mean, you've got no televisions to watch, or books to read, or papers to read, or crosswords to do, or anything like that. You know, it's pretty.
How did you amuse yourself?
You know, I can't really remember much. I think we had a sleep, and just did. I think most of you spend a lot of time pulling up. Wireless sets and doing things like that, probably overdoing it, you know, and
sort of playing with the wireless sets.
One of the things, one thing I can remember, we lost a few blokes in Tobruk. I remember the first bloke that I lost was a bloke named, one of my singers.
All right, come back.
I remember going picking him up, and he kept saying, I'm all right. The poor buggy died.
Where'd he been hit?
In the stomach. He caught the shell and the explosion and got his stomach. And he was in a bad way. There's two blokes with the same name. What I was saying there.
You're talking about the casualties. You started to, you had, you didn't have a lot, but you said that you had some.
Yeah, we had a few casualties. Yeah.
Did it upset you when people you?
Well, yeah, when you know, people that you knew and you saw them bad legs, and I remember one of the officers coming in one day, and he got a wound in his foot. I think it was Chadburn.
Chadburn.
Chadburn. I think it was Chadbird, if I remember rightly. I needed a piece of shrapnel and sliced his foot. And that was hanging out in the, you know, I'm not thinking about that. Although, well, you know, I suppose we did lose quite a few blokes, but you lost them gradually. Oh, what I was going to say, we had lost a few blokes, and we had a few replacements come.
How did they fit in?
Well, we didn't have all that many, but I remember this one bloke in particular, and you were talking about what we did, and with me being in charge of the wireless and everything, I used to try and tune into the forces network or whatever, you know what I mean, to try and find what was going off or hear some music or anything like that. And I remember this bloke coming up one day and he said to me, he says, can you get Vera Lynn, Sarge? I said, can you get who? He said, Vera Lynn. Bloody hell, it's Vera Lynn. And you know, I'd never even heard of Vera Lynn. Of course, he said, I've never heard of Vera Lynn, you know, the Force of Sweetheart and all that kind of thing. I tried tuning in to see if I could get anything, because, you know, all of these sets weren't too bad for that kind of thing. I never did get it, that was really.
Did you ever get any music programmes?
Oh, yeah. Got the own music programme.
What sort? From who?
Well, I'm not quite sure. It was just music, you know what I mean? I think occasionally we got one, two English programmes. I think we got some that broadcast from Cairo, somewhere like that, or Alexandria. I don't know whether it was a Forces radio or something like that.
What about German or Italian stations? Because music's music. If
yeah,
you see
that's
what
right, mean. Yeah. Well, I got music, and where it came from, I wasn't too sure, you know. But, I mean, that was really playing about.
You didn't hear any propaganda radio from either side?
Not at all. I didn't, anyway.
Would you let other people listen to the radio? Was there any way of rigging up a speaker, or was it
just all
on all the cans?
Anything to rig it up. I'll tell you one thing that you were asking about some of the things we did for the news. Well, occasionally they used to run a bit of a concert when, you know, you'd get a bloke playing the ukulele. I remember Max Miller in particular. I don't know whether anybody talk about Max. Usually, well, his name was Miller. We used to call him Max. Like Max Miller. And what did you call him? Humphreys was the name of that bloke.
The bloke was killed, yeah.
We used to have the odd sing-song.
Whereabouts? Because you couldn't gather too easily, could you?
No, it was in one of these dugouts and everything. You know, so we used to go to the... I have no idea. It was at 425 HQ. I'm not 100%. You know, that's what I'm thinking about that. But we did occasionally have these, you know, where a few people went along and somebody told jokes and sang a few songs and played the old ukulele or whatever.
Was it enjoyable?
Oh, well, that was fine. Yeah, that was good. Because Miller was pretty funny bloke, but he used to just say he was playing a bloke named Hall and used to tell jokes and all that kind of thing.
And they were funny enough, were they?
They weren't
embarrassing.
Yeah. Oh, no. I can remember one, and it was, he said, she was only a colonel's daughter, but she knew what Reggie meant. It was that kind of rubbish.
What about any games, either made-up games or cricket, football, any sort of game like that?
Not that I can recall. I suppose I might have done, but I don't know. I don't remember playing any particular games.
What about cards?
Cards. Oh, I used to play cards.
Was this gambling or just cards?
Gambling, cards, yeah. Gambling was a big thing. I mean, we had plenty of money.
You were still paid, were you?
As far as I remember, yeah. We didn't, but you didn't take a lot out, if you know what I mean. You just had enough to keep you going. I suppose blows to buy the fans or things like that, you know what I mean. But
were you winning? Did you win?
Well, you win a few, you lose a few, you know what I mean.
What game did you play?
Well, mostly Bragg and Five Card. Bragg, is it called? Five Card, Bragg, and Pontoon. Those kind of games, you know.